Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the publication of the Q2 report 2021 of SFC Energy SG. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press the star key followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Dr. Peter Podesser, CEO, who will lead you through this conference. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today in our half-year earnings call. Together with Daniel, we will be happy to give you an overview of the business and financial results of the first 6 months, and naturally also have an outlook with you together into the remainder of the year. As always, we will be very pleased to answer your questions in the subsequent Q&A session and look forward to this. If we look now back to the first 6 months of the year, I think we can overall see and report a solid performance. We look back at the best first half of the year of the company's history, two main topics. We see healthy growth. After a good start in first quarter, we continued the path here with 12.3% of organic growth. And at the same time, the second element here bringing to your attention actually is the operational profitability significantly improving, almost tripling here in the first 6 months. But naturally, this is the past. Good to see and good to look at it, but then looking forward, big elements of, I think, interest and our close attention is the ongoing buildup of an order backlog. We see the order backlog, despite the growth in the first 6 months, up 73% compared to January 1 this year. And so overall, generically, we feel ourselves well on track to deliver what we indicated as the targets for this year, but more so than also for the midterm targets here of the group. Let me now look into some of the key drivers here. The activity in the second quarter being up 22% compared to last year across both segments of the company is positive, is strong, is not regionally limited to one region. But at the same time, we also have to see, and I think we don't want to hide this, naturally, the second quarter last year was the first quarter where we saw some signs of COVID impact here in some of our end markets, from the oil and gas part to the government part and also to the power electronics part. So I think factoring this in still, I'd say we see a consistent and solid growth picture. What are the key areas of focus and what have been and what are those here for the future? Our key attention is always directed to the performance and the product of the quality of our products, applying our experience and learning curve out of the different markets here in a fast way. And I think seeing the introduction of the new EFOY series here started end of last year for consumers, second quarter here for the industrial customer base, our methanol product line fully renewed, already contributing significantly to the growth here is, I'd say, one proof of this being one pillar of our company policy. And the second area of focus always is and has been expanding existing market access and finding new market access, either direct or through partnerships. And as I think also here, we will go into some of the details for the first 6 months of the year later in the presentation. If we look at the macro environment, yeah, consistently improving here. Hydrogen and fuel cells are at the end Now, in the midst of society, attention of, let's say, all of us in terms of a technology that can help us to meet challenges here of climate change. Those technologies, especially also against, I think, the backdrop of the recent findings of the World Climate Council, tell us we have to act sooner than later. We have to act now. And I think our contribution here can be and has to be having already product out there that can help our customers to improve their CO2 footprint, to reduce their CO2 footprint, replace conventional technologies like diesel generators by environmentally friendly stationary energy supply. And this ranges from our end customers, motorhomes, tiny houses, sailboats, to the bigger markets now means industrial application. Backup power generators, critical infrastructure or telecom, smart traffic systems. Across all those applications, we see a growing attention, but more so, it's not only interest. We have experienced this interest for a couple of years. We now see real willingness to invest into sustainable new solutions for replacement of incumbent technologies. And I think that the big advantage here of SFC is we have been out there now for more than 20 years. We have the products and we have the market access that needs to be expanded and improved as we speak. And some of the highlights, first 6 months on the partnership side to get market access, we reported on this naturally earlier, but expanding our partnership here with Toyota Tsusho beyond Japan with a solid foundation in Japan, but also now to Southeast Asia and China. The one with Yenoptik for traffic management system, with Leosphere for the wind energy, and the most recent one, as recent as yesterday now, with NEL, building blocks and individual pieces to the puzzle we are putting together here for our midterm picture. Concrete orders, I think, as highlights, only mentioning two of them. Again, in Japan, Toyota with a three-digit number of EFOYs purchased in one lot, which has not been the case any time before. In industrial application here again. Same in the U.S. with our partner LifeView. Surveillance cameras here that are put out there on parking lots of Walmart stores and NFL stadiums to ensure that there is enough crime prevention done 24/7, 365. Also there, a three-digit number of EFOYs purchased in one lot, which is, I'd say, a significant step forward. The key message here from us is there is a broad and strong demand for this technology, be it on methanol or hydrogen platforms. And this is regionally broad, and this is broad in terms of applications. And I think this is where I want to direct your attention to. This breadth of the various application is the basis here for the stability and the resilience of our business model. What we see is, at the beginning, maybe historically, one would say, dispersed and fragmented market access. I think now we are turning this into an advantage, making it broad and therefore more resilient. Some numbers now. I mentioned this, 31.1 million sales, 12.3% growth, organic growth, and in the second quarter, year-on-year, 22% growth. And in both segments, stronger growth in clean energy means the fuel cell part of the business, but also solid growth here in the power division in clean power management. Looking at the details of clean energy, Year-on-year growth, 16.2% to 19.3 million revenue. It's the segment that accounts for 62% of the total sales. Driven by the methanol, but also the hydrogen platform of our product range. In the second quarter here, significant improvement here of the growth rate to 33% here for clean energy in the second quarter of 21. Which applications are driving this growth? We mentioned this earlier in the year already. There is a very positive sentiment and big demand here in our end consumer business, driven by sustainability requirements here from end consumers, but naturally also the mere growth here of the motorhome business in Europe. But also, and with this, resulting in a 55% growth here year on year for the first 6 months and even approximately 80% growth in the second quarter. But also the other end markets, industrial with 9% growth after a significant growth here last year already. The North American business here, driven by our, let's say, oil and gas end customers, also after a still slower start in Q1 because of a very strong Q1 in 2020, shows now after 6 months a positive 2% against last year's result. And I think important to mention, we started the year with almost no backlog compared to a 5 million backlog the year before in the oil and gas part. And then looking into this again in a more detailed way, that the key message here is that the EFOY business in North America is today on a three-digit growth path. We recorded about 1 million of EFOY sales in Canada and the US last year. Mid-year, we are now at 2.6 million, so 160% growth here in the EFOY business in North America. So, and this, despite the limitations here still we are facing in terms of travel, we expect first travel being possible under current conditions, later part of September, our salespeople being able to see customers again then in the US. The only end market where we are below, and we don't want to hide this by any means, below last year is our government defense and security business, down 2% compared to last year, so we did a pretty good catch up in Q2. But we also have a solid backlog built up here in this business. So the expectation for the year end is also growth in defense and security. And I would say a 50% growth rate here, defense and security, is definitely the realistic path. Clean power management, as I said, showing growth here, single-digit solid growth, 6.5%, and the mix of the growth, the mix of the shipments, but also the order intake from existing customers like Thermo Fisher or ASML, long-term industrial large partners, but also new customers, for example, Comet Group, one of the also suppliers to the semiconductor industry, using now initial units of our laser platform here developed in the Netherlands, is a healthy combination. Ongoing expansion of the business, large customers, recovering from some of the slowdown of COVID, but the semiconductor business being on a strong cycle with ASML on top of it is driving this business. So also here, overall market expectation and our own expectation for the year end is to stay in the growth corridor we are seeing right now. On the regional split of the business, I would like to hand over to Daniel. He will also then naturally lead you through the financial results of the first 6 months.
Thank you, Peter, and good morning also from my side. Thank you for dialing in and the interest in our numbers. When we look at the regional sales distribution in the first half year, that Europe, excluding Germany, with approximately 43%, remains the largest regional market for us. North America, as Peter also mentioned, is 37%. It's a bit less contribution than in the previous half year. Slightly lower is the U.S. business, given the ongoing containment measures we have there. But like I said, it's just a bit lower from what we had in the first half year 2020. Together, still those two regions, and that is consistent with the previous quarters and the previous year, account for approximately 80% of our revenue. Asia has been picking up again. Peter mentioned Toyota Tsushu. They account for 6% of our revenues in the first half year, and Germany, our strong domestic market, for 13% in the first half year. So overall, you can still see there's no significant changes in the regional distribution. If you look at the gross profit and gross margin, the development is positive in line with our sales. Our gross profit amounted to 11.2 million euros in the first half year, which is about 2.4 million up from the previous first half year. That translates into a 36% gross margin, which I believe is a noticeable increase from the 32% we had in the previous half years, and also an increase to the full year 2020 gross margin, which came to 34%. The increase of the gross margin is a function partially of reduced or lower personal expenses, but also lower rent expenses that we have and lower material expenses. And last but not least, also always impacted a bit by the product mix and the products we deliver in the period. We are aware of the challenges in the supply chain, as we also mentioned in our previous calls, and you've seen that by the development of our inventory, we have been stockpiling already since the third quarter last year. We will keep on doing that, but I'll touch on that later. We are still working in gradually increasing our gross margin. It is a function of supply chain management, also optimizing the bill of material of product, and still looking in sensible growth, i.e. we want to make sure that we sell our products at decent prices. If I go and have a look at the gross margin per business unit slash segment, we're looking at a gross margin of 40% for the segment Clean Energy, coming to 7.8 million euros compared to 6.2 million euros and a 37% margin in the first half year of 2020. That's also a noticeable increase of 3 percentage points. The gross margin is always impacted, and I mentioned that before, on a half year and quarterly basis by the product mix and the application mix. However, the underlying trend that we can see, gross margins remain healthy and are expanding. The gross margin, including power management, was 29% in the first half year, translating into a gross profit of 3.4 million. That compares to 2.6 million euros in the previous years and a 23% margin in the previous year. We could observe higher gross margin in all product families in the clean power management segment, but let's keep in mind the first half year in 2020 was heavily impacted by the pandemic and the pandemic-induced recession. Having a look at our EBITDA, the group reported EBITDA is negative. Negative is 1.9 million euros, obviously a negative margin of 6%. In 2020, it was negative 2.1 million euros. But the reported EBITDA, as in each quarter or in most quarters, is more significantly impacted by the high long-term incentive, stock option, and ZAS option program valuation, and the expense that was charged is a non-cash expense, but it's still expense that was charged in the first half year amount to 5.7 million euros. In the previous year, it was 3.1 million euros. Also, we got to a minor part transaction-related expenses in the reported EBITDA of 100,000 euros. ZAS expenses, and I keep on mentioning that, is a function of the share price development. As the share price rises or increases, also these IRS expenses will increase, even though they are non-cash, until the maturity of the various programs. The group adjusted EBITDA, and as always, we report the adjusted EBITDA or underlying EBITDA to compare apples with apples and, you know, make it a more objective indicator for the financial performance. The adjustments in total to EBITDA were 5.4 million euros for those extraordinary expense items that I mentioned before. The DAS expenses are allocated, as always, to the functional cost, sales and marketing, and general administration expenses. They are classified as personal expenses. The DAS expenses in total, 5.7 million euros. Let's remember the share price went all the way up to 28 euros compared to 16 euros, 15 euros at the end of the last year. The higher EBITDA margin is really a function of the higher gross margin that we saw, but also we had to some extent a bit higher operating income. Getting to EBIT, looking at depreciation amortization, that was in total 2 million euros. The major part of depreciation is IFRS 16 related, approximately 46%. And the second largest part in depreciation is R&D related from our capitalized R&D, approximately accounting for 35% of the depreciation. The R&D depreciation is roughly 250,000 euros higher than the previous year as we started to depreciate the new product generation that Peter mentioned we introduced last year. So that is now being depreciated as we have rolled out the product successfully in the market. So then we come to a group adjusted EBITDA group adjusted EBIT of 1.5 million euro, translating in a 4.5% EBIT margin compared to a negative, slightly negative adjusted EBIT in the previous years. Let me briefly go into the operating expenses that we had. Sales and marketing unadjusted, i.e. unadjusted for the special effects, were higher than in the previous year with 8.4 million euros versus 7.1 million euros. 3.4 million euros expenses of LTI program are included. Adjusted for these extraordinary expenses, the sales and marketing expenses stayed flattish in the first half year compared to the first half year 2020 at 5.1 million euro. Still, sales and marketing expenses are at a pretty low level. It has to do with the reduced travel and reduced trade fair expenses that we had in the first half year. But as the pandemic, or at least traveling starts or travel activity starts, we also expect sales and marketing expenses to be a bit higher in the second half of the year. So overall, sales and marketing expenses are 60% of revenues compared to 80% in the last year and 90% of the full last year. We still stick to our long-term range where we see sales and marketing expenses around 12 to 30% of our revenues as revenues are growing. R&D expenses, the total R&D cost in the P&L was 1.5 million euros, so about 100,000 euros less than in the first half year of 2020, where it accounted for 1.6 million euros. There are capitalized R&D expenses were 1.3 million euros versus 1.9 million euros in the previous year, so a decent 35% lower. It has to do that we had quite a few capitalized R&D expenses with a new product generation in the first half year of 2020, high software development prices costs that was included there. And as we launched the new product, obviously the capitalization also went down. So the total R&D cost, i.e. The cost that we expensed over the P&L as well as the capitalized R&D expenses amounted to 2.9 million euros, also a bit lower than in the previous year. And that corresponds into a 9% of revenues. We had 30% in the last year. That's in line with our planning and we're still driving forward our projects in development projects, which is new product generation, of course, the hydrogen fuel cell, and the power platform for conversion. Long term, we're still looking at 6 to 7% R&D spend, total R&D spend of our revenues. G&A unadjusted were 6 million euros versus 4 million euros in the previous year. If we take out again the ZARS expenses and the transaction related expenses of totally 2.3 million euros, will come to adjusted G&A expenses of 3.4 million euros. They are higher, approximately 30% higher compared to the first half year last year. It's personal expenses. They account for the largest portion of these expenses, approximately two-thirds of it. And we had an increased headcount, but also we had higher IT spending in their first half year. And last but not least, legal and advisory costs. Quick glance at the balance sheet, our fixed assets. I know I keep repeating myself, but we are an asset-light company, so we don't have a lot of CapEx in equipment and PP&E. The total CapEx, intangible assets, NPP&E, was 1.6 million euros versus 2.6 million euros in the previous year. The large part is intangible assets with 1.3 million euros, and that is really the capitalized R&D, which, you know, account for 76% of our total CapEx. About, 200,000 euros were really equipment and machinery. Looking at our cash and our net debt, the freely available cash was 28.9 million euros versus 31.5 million euros at the end of last year. Our financial debt decreased by 500,000 euros, so we're looking at 4 million euros of financial debt versus 4.5 million at the end of last year. All of this debt is short term, and it's in large parts working capital lines with our affiliate companies and daughter companies in Canada as well as in the Netherlands. So that translates into a net cash position of 24.9 million euros compared to 26.9 at the end of the year. Our equity ratio went down to 58% versus 64% of last year. That's mainly driven by the net loss and also the ZARS expenses. And a quick glance also at our cash flow. The operating cash flow before changes in net working capital amounted to 3.1 million euros, so significantly up from last year numbers, which was 1.1 million euro. However, also a net working capital increase, inventory increased, cash impacting by 318K. So we still have a high level of inventory. We will keep that. We will keep stocking raw material to make sure that we don't have any supply chain interruption, especially with the challenges in the environment. So expect that our inventory level will stay high. We also had a significant increase in accounts receivable of 2.3 million euros. It has to do that we shipped quite a bit in June. So that this the account receivables really went up in the month of June. Accounts payable also increased by 830K. After taxes and after changes in cash flow, changes in net working capital, our cash flow from operating activities was positive, 672,000 euros. Where did we invest our cash and our money? We had the cash from investing activities, as mentioned before, which amounted to 1.6 million euros, mostly R&D. We had cash flow from financing activities, also amounting to negative or spending of 1.6 million euros. Thereof, we paid back 600,000 euros in financial debt. The largest position is IFRS 16 related cost of 800,000 euros. So that translates in a total change of cash of 2.5 million euros. I think with that, I would hand it over back to Peter.
Well, thanks, Daniel. An important element on our path here to further growth is naturally also the number of hats, the pairs of shoulders and hands who are helping us to achieve what we are what we are trying to achieve here. The number of people employed here at the end of the half year with 282 is almost stable. We saw some fluctuation, not significant, but the search for talent definitely, besides ensuring supply chain and making sure we are containing all our, or we are continuing all our COVID measures, are one of the three key elements also for the second half of the year, or the remaining 4.5 months here. For this year, but pertaining into next year. We have about 40 open positions in the group right now, of which approximately half of it are already either contracted or have an offer on the table. So on a good track, but it is an area of specific and very high attention here of the whole management team, because although the topic here of fuel cells, clean and sustainable energy technology is attractive for young talent, still there is a fight out there for talent. And well, we managed this so far pretty well. As I said, almost half of the open positions are well on its way, but still we're looking for more. And then the outlook here. With the solid first and the good first half, and I think we can also say with good first, whatever, 7.5 months, we see ourselves fully positioned here to confirm the expected growth here, growth rate between 15% and 30%, still a broad range because some bigger projects are still in there. 61 to 70 million euros is the expectation. This is what we definitely can confirm from our perspective today. On the expected EBITDA underlying, we did a concretization already a couple of months ago to the range of 4.756 million. And we are doing the same right now for the EBIT, concretizing the range here to 1 million to 1.6 million on the EBIT underlying. Summarizing, yeah, very good, almost 8 months now. There's no reason to sit back. There's no room for complacency. I think it's motivation and inspiration to even deliver better in the upcoming period ahead of us. And with this, I would like to hand back to Lisa and open then the floor for your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. And our first question comes from Carsten von Blumenthal, First Berlin Equity Research. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good morning, Peter. Good morning, Daniel. You showed a very strong increase in order backlog. Could you shed some light on in which markets these orders came from, and which products drive your order backlog?
Absolutely. Good morning, Carsten. I think we have a good distribution here amongst the end markets, starting from oil and gas to defense and security to our civilian fuel cell business and the power business. So pretty even distribution, a little higher backlog on the power side because of longer lead cycles and longer project cycles driven also by the supply chain.
All right, thanks for this. Yesterday you announced the cooperation with the Norwegian NEL, and you said first products will be out roughly, I think, second half of 2022. Do you have a rough sales expectation regarding this cooperation in 2022 and 2023?
Well, we are obviously particularly pleased here with this agreement here. At the end, what we did is, as we mentioned this also early in the year when we published our midterm plan, that integrating electrolyzer capability is one of the strategic targets here on the product roadmap. And instead of going out and do an expensive investment into maybe an electrolyzer startup, I think the idea simply was to form a coalition here of technology and market leaders. And this idea at the end led to me reaching out to Jon-André Loke and just explaining what we see as a market potential in the stationary power market, replacing diesel generators by integrated electrolyzer fuel cell systems and doing this with an established player, putting together two proven cutting-edge products, technologies, naturally also gives us an advantage in terms of time to market, and that's why we are confident to bring this out by already a second half of 22 for the first power range here up between 10 and 50 kilowatts, and the second one being then up to 500, which will take some time longer. But then, well, looking at the market, I think we are maybe not there to have the budget numbers in there. But if you look at the overall market, if you looked at, well, right now, independent research reports, research houses see the stationary fuel cell market growing from about, in our power ranges for our applications, growing from about, let's say, a single 4 billion euro market here from today's perspective to a 30 billion market in 2030. And what we see, and there the assessment naturally is our own assessment together with the inputs also from our Norwegian partners, we see 50% of SFC's stationary fuel cell market really as a suitable market for on-site green hydrogen production. So we really target at half of our sales then being really integrated systems by whatever, 2025. So
right.
In terms of really product numbers, units in the budget plan, there, maybe you can give us some more weeks and months to go through our planning cycle. It is, I'd say, as recent as yesterday that we formalized all of this. But saying this, yeah, the technical teams have been working on this for a couple of months already since beginning of the year. So we are good on track to bring a really attractive product. And we are the first one worldwide doing this here for this market.
All right, and 50% fuel cells for on-site green hydrogen is a very clear answer to my question in the medium and long term. That's very interesting. In the conference call, you mentioned that you expect your defense, security, government business to increase roughly 50% year on year. And naturally, projects are in Q4. Is that likely to be the case this year, or do you also expect a strong rise in Q3 already?
We expect the impact already in Q3. As said, we are fortunate with a strong backlog here already into the running quarter. And I think a range of 5 to 6 million for the year end still is doable, where 5 million overall we see as solid and I would say realistic, and the 6 million is really the upper range. But it's not a year end cluster risk where we are waiting for one single customer taking decisions in November. I think we've taken our learnings out of this.
Okay, that sounds promising for Q3 already. When I look into the Q2 figures, they were certainly strong, but compared to Q1, one might think that there is a certain loss of momentum if I see the top line figure. So was there anything that held you back in Q2 regarding even stronger growth?
No, I think we have to see here that we have a usual seasonality in the oil and gas end market with what they call the breakup season, where the permafrost goes up and people cannot go into the field usually for a month time frame, which even this year took a little longer. So overall, if we see, let's say, the all the civilian segments, including also the power business, we have a consistent growth in there. And we had this discussion also yesterday here when discussing also the NEL collaboration with a couple of parties, even in summertime, and I'm talking July and August, we see consistent activity and demand. We have not done any shutdown in our production this year compared or in contrary to last year. We fortunately cannot afford to do this. And so therefore, besides the COVID measures still being in place and being cautious here, protecting our manufacturing team, we need every single day to get product out.
And that sounds really great. So we can expect a rather stronger Q3 than Q2.
Well, I think this is a precise assessment.
So I thank you very much for taking my questions.
Thanks, Carsten.
And our next question comes from Dijs Berghorder at ABN AMRO ODDO BHF. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Good to be in the call again. First question is on your outlook on underlying EBITDA and EBIT. Can you explain the low end of your guidance range, because it would imply a significantly lower result in the second half than in the first half? You just explained you expect Q3 to be better than Q2, and in Q4 you expect sizable defense to come back. Second question is from your presentation. You talked about triple-digit orders in Japan and North America. Can you maybe explain the expected timing of these orders to actually come into your order backlog? Probably a phased approach there. And maybe for now, final question is on, let's say, a global shortage of components. Can you explain how the situation is on your side, whether there's a scare of a component shortage as well?
Absolutely. Maybe, Daniel, you want to start?
Yeah, please. All right, good morning. So answering your first question, and as you know, I'm not known for being overly bullish when it comes to planning our operating expenses, it's really a conservative case. But there are three impacts that I may want to highlight. As mentioned, you know, we do see challenges in the supply chains, which we have handled very well so far. We are very well positioned, as mentioned, having started very early. But of course, one cannot exclude that we may, you know, get certain challenges on the gross margin. Secondly, as I also mentioned, if you look at the functional cost, sales and marketing costs in the first half year were relatively low, basically flattish with the first half year of 2020. It has to do that there was very little travel activity, basically no trade fairs. The activity does pick up right now. We are looking at catching up also on trade fair and customer events. So I would not expect that sales and marketing expenses, if the development of the pandemic, keeps, say, you know, in a certain development, I wouldn't expect our sales and marketing costs will be at the level of the first half year. And last but not least, if you look at our G&A, we are growing rapidly. Peter mentioned it. We are looking for talented people. Of course, we do invest in our people to be prepared for also the opportunities that we're looking to. So also on the G&A side, you know, if I want to be conservative or careful, you know, I would expect the expenses, you know, to, you know, maybe go up a bit. So that really explains, you know, why and there's a range, you know, why there may be a lower operating income in the second half of the year.
And if I may add here, I think the moment we have clarity and visibility of some of those items, we definitely actually will have to look at the corridor here, as we have done it now in the past two quarters in a sequence. But this also would lead. Does this answer your first question, Tyson?
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah.
And then I'm coming maybe to the third question because it's related to this. Yeah, supply chain, area of high attention. And well, we have covered ourselves here in terms of risk hedging by simply doing a lot of stockpiling, not optimizing our working capital, but ensuring simply a supply chain. We have continued this also into Q3 and Q4. We do see very little risk here for Q3, but we are right now in the process of assessing Q4 risk size. There are regional and partial shutdowns again in China affecting some of the electronic supply chain, but still is a concern at this point in time. It is definitely something we need to deal with in the next couple of weeks, but still, even factoring this in, we stick to, let's say, our guidance here for the revenue side. And for example, we have also released all the purchases already here for critical components, especially on the fuel cell side for Q1. So this is already in the works. The second, those orders, Japan and the U.S., the good part of it is it is already shipped, products are already with our customers. The bad part of it is, not part of the backlog, but also there, the good thing is still the backlog went up significantly. So at the end, EFOY orders, usually the turn here is between 1 and 3 months, not longer. But we are seeing a tendency now naturally to get longer lead times because of the high loading we have in the factory.
Yeah, but so coming back on the triple digit, is that a triple digit on a 10-year frame, on a 5-year frame, on a 3-year frame?
We shipped both orders already out, but at the same time, we had repeat orders already in again from Toyota, not at, let's say, the 100 piece level, but between, let's say, 50, 80 pieces, and this is an ongoing business. And the same we see now, fortunately, with our new partner here in the U.S. also working on the next bigger projects and bigger orders. What they are doing there, and this is, I think, what we have been seeing in Europe already earlier with partners like Bauwatch or our UK and Scandinavian partners in this surveillance business, they replace their conventional generator-powered camera systems that are mounted usually on trailers for the mobile systems. They are replacing this by fuel cells. And I think that's maybe the American part of it. they're doing this faster, key decision taken, and then they just replace. In Europe, usually this would take maybe 2 years longer, first system out, and 10 units tested for a year or 1.5 years, and then we get the first, whatever, 24. In the US, we did the testing with them together for a couple of months, and then they replaced about 100 system at once. So a fast adoption.
Good to hear. Yeah, good to hear. Singapore has slowed down or is temporarily down due to COVID?
Yeah, there was naturally really also an impact and the slowdown on COVID. We are, and this is one of the reasons where when Daniel mentioned the regional distribution that Asia is slightly down in the first 6 months, we are expecting a rebound here in Q2 with already visible projects here in our project log.
Yeah, and in India, similar, I assume.
Yeah, we saw now really the initial orders already in part of it in Q2. We expect Q3 and Q4 activity here. We have been focusing also on broadening, let's say, our collaboration here with the existing partner and potential new partners. So this is one area where we have been spending a lot of our attention and time to.
Okay, good to hear. And maybe final question on your motorhome business and new products. It looks really sexy, I must say, but of course, market circumstances have been exceptionally strong. How is that now doing, let's say, end of summer?
Well, and still there also, naturally, August really is the slowest month. We are preparing for next week's caravan salon. This will be really a presence. Activity means the trade show, the exhibition is happening. And besides OEM partnerships, we are also working on a concept for a green campground here, means off-grid energy supply also for the campground with our hydrogen products. We will come up with an innovative concept here end of next week in our press conference there.
Nice. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Tyson.
And our next question comes from Anne-Margaret Crowe at Madison Group. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for taking my call and congratulations on an absolutely brilliant first half. I'd just like to ask a follow-on question regarding the partnership with Nel Hydrogen. I'm wondering, you say you reached out to them. Will they be selling the combined product as well to their customer base? And if so, how are you going to, I know it's early days yet, but how are you going to sort of organize arrangements so that you're not competing with each other?
Well, and first of all, good morning, Anne-Margaret. And Nell, yeah, for the time being, I think the concept is very clear. As Nell has not been active in this industrial distributed power market, at the end we are bringing and offering a market access, and the distribution of tasks is pretty simplistic here. We both work with our technical teams on the product integration, and then we are the ones with the obligation to execute the sales. So therefore, no competition to be expected. But you're right, we are naturally also assessing how this product could fit into their offering, into their markets. We are thinking of backup power for hydrogen stations, because it would be an awkward picture. You're having a hydrogen filling station and then the backup power there is generated by a diesel genset. So there is work being done already, but in our core markets, we will be responsible for the sales and have to make sure we make our Norwegian partners happy with high numbers.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Severis Stefano. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning to both. Had one question in particular on the agreement you signed with Nordic Yachting. It seems an interesting development. Could you also give us an idea of what we could expect there and the potential revenues you see in that activity, especially in an area which is quite polluting? So maybe there is a lot of prospects for you. And the second question is also about your cash flows and when do you expect to turn free cash flow positive? Thank you.
Good morning, Fabrice. Can you help me with the first one? I did not get the first part of it properly, I guess.
Oh, yes. You've announced an agreement with Nordic Yachting to provide fuel cells. And it would be great to hear a bit more about it, please. Thank you. Thank you, Peter.
That's at the end, the strategy we are pursuing in this market, be I'd say yachting, motorhomes, whatever, trying to get more and more into an OEM status, because at the end they all have the pressure now to replace their conventional power sources over time. We had really challenges and big hurdles in terms of, let's say, initial capex of the fuel cell over the past years. This is now, let's say, eliminated step by step by a total cost of ownership approach, but also by the sustainability pressure all the manufacturers are under. And put it in a different way, so far we have only served some high-end markets where really the end consumer did decide for the fuel cell as a source, and now we try to go the OEM road. And on the cash flow, maybe Daniel, you can take over.
Yes. So if you look at our cash flow and you see the two largest positions really where we are investing, that's first of all net working capital, which is increasing and which will be growing. And the second is obviously CapEx / R&D investment. We are growing at what we consider a decently high pace. We are expanding our business, as Peter also mentioned, regionally, but also in different end markets. There are a lot of opportunities, and we will continue to do that. We believe, and I know we're strongly convinced, and I mentioned our R&D spending will be, you know, adequately high going forward, especially with the hydrogen platforms developing, for also the other existing platforms, the corporation Nell was just mentioning. So we have a very long answer to your short questions. When will be cash flow, free cash flow positive? We will be in the future cash flow positive, but we will definitely further invest in tapping the market and really keeping our head start that we have in the sector. And that means we keep investing in R&D, and also expect that our net working capital will increase as we reach out into different regions and different countries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Malte Schaumann at Warburg Research. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning. The first one, I wanted to touch again on the functional costs. I mean, you indicated rising costs, rather rising costs in the quarters to come, but you had kind of a 5 million run rate in the past quarters on average. So for the overall sum, can you potentially provide some more color where this should trend to in the second half of the year and then going into the next year?
Functional cost. Oh, sorry, functional cost. Hi, Malte. I didn't probably say. So the functional cost, and I will touch into the question that Thies has. I would expect that if you look at something 5 to going to 6.5 million euros. Like I said, I expect sales and marketing costs to increase slightly. I would expect G&A costs to really increase slightly. I don't expect any major impacts this year. We'll see on the R&D expenses. It also has a bit to do, as you know, with what do we capitalize, what we work on. That will be slightly above the previous year's numbers. So that's what we're moving in. And it depends a bit on what we get in terms of subsidies or joint development agreement that taps into our R&D expenses. So I wouldn't expect, really, and we don't plan for a significant increase, but I would not expect neither for them to stay flattish in the second half part of the year.
No, sure. So the 6.5 million run rate could be reached by the end of the year, and then is the expectation for the next year, or do you see the necessity to then scale up further significantly?
Oh, we will further scale up as we grow. You see the growth rate that we're having, especially also in here in Germany. So yes, we are, and Peter mentioned it. We are hiring. We're getting people on board. It is a pretty high pace we're doing here. So yes, we will further invest also in human resources for our group.
Yeah, sure. On the R&D budget, I mean, that was down year over year. But generally speaking, how do you see the budget developing going forward? I mean, you have some development activities. Do you see the need for higher rising investments as well to support the future growth, or where would you see R&D developing to?
Well, if I may start here. At the end, I think the corridor is pretty similar. We have definitely now with let's say the next generation of our E4 hydrogen, we have at the end a replacement for the previous E4 methanol program, and we are also putting naturally now resources onto the collaboration here with Nel. So and in Holland we are working on the second generation here of the power management here for the hydrogen fuel cells. But all of this in the corridor, we have seen it right now. The two impacting factors, as Daniel mentioned before, is then how fast can we get things finalized and therefore then adapt the activation and the capitalization, and at the same time, we need to see how fast can we get some of those subsidies being really already now in application, being then released. Although we see all those political announcements here on hydrogen being important, until this is then on the administration side executed, usually you see, let's say, half a year passing by in a heartbeat. So far, none of our applications has been released so far. But this naturally can have a very positive impact into, I would say, latest 2-3 months of this year, and then naturally into 2022 and 2023.
That would have been my next question. I mean, what's the magnitude you see as the potential funding in the current environment for your R&D activities?
Well, we are as usual pretty modest here, no? And although everybody talks about the billions and billions spent, the biggest part goes again into the automotive industry, steel and chemical industry. I think understandable because of the high workforce being affected here. For us, we have now handed in projects of a size of 5 to 6 million across Germany, Netherlands, and we are preparing something now for Canada and Romania. And usually the funding rate goes up to about 40%. So that's, and then we are talking about, I'd say, 1, 2, 3 million direct subsidy. But naturally, if we can perpetuate this on a yearly basis, we've for example also hired a specialist here being fully dedicated on funding programs on government level, which is a pretty fast return of investment if you have one person really focusing on this. So starting slow with maybe an initial impact, October, November, December timeframe this year, 300,000-500,000, and then next year between 1 and 2 million, and then hopefully we keep the 2 million range ongoing. So that would be the corridor here.
Okay, good. My next question is on the Jupiter fuel cells. We can shed some light on what the revenue contributions were in the first half or second quarter, and how do you see the rollout going on in the next couple of months or quarters?
With all due respect to our partners, Upcore, on purpose, we've changed here the naming and we've released our own EFOY hydrogen platform, which at the end of the day is the next generation here of this product. And in first half here, we have shipped approximately 100 systems, so whatever, 83% more than last year. Yeah, not a miracle, because we just started in second quarter of last year. The second half of the year right now is there. We have a picture that is twofold: the rollout of the Bosnet systems together with Upcore in Germany will come to an end here in the second half of the year for the first orders here in Bavaria. But there is a new tender out that has been released a couple of weeks back, where Bavaria is going or is tendering a number of 500 to 700 new sites here, starting the rollout in 2022 and then into 2023. So this will be the biggest stationary fuel cell tender being released for the time being on fuel cells here for the telecom site. And it's ongoing, so we expect this to close somewhere in Q4. And naturally, we need to make sure we are amongst the selected parties, which we will not be, again, the general contractor there, because there is all the civil works in there. So this is large contractors doing this. But naturally, we are out there for the integrated fuel cell systems together with Upcore.
Mm-hmm. And what's the expectation for system shipments until the end of the year?
There we might even see, let's say, a slower shipment rate than in the first half of the year, because the big program coming to an end here now. But the number of new projects, the number of direct business here, be it in Germany, be it in other European countries, as well as now starting also in North America, is, I would say, the good news here. At the end, the overall project size we are tracking, and I'm saying really project log, we are seeing about 100 million overall project log out there. And not to be misunderstood, it's not 100 million of orders. It is really the projects that we have been now working on, mostly driven by telecom and critical infrastructure. That's I think the realistic picture. We might see some slower sales here in Q3, and then it really depends on how fast we can close some of those projects. But seeing also that we bring our first 50 kilowatt system into the field, we sold this to an industrial park here in Austria, is I would say a good reference case. So therefore, the planning we have internally is showing the same curve. So we were not planning to simply repeat this BossNet program here on a quarterly basis, because we cannot impact the timeline here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our question is on Toyota Tsusho. I mean, it's pretty early days, but so far, how the corporation develops, how do you see them stepping into applications, et cetera? Is that more or less according to plan? Anything to mention about how the corporation developed in the first days?
Mm-hmm. So what we do is we have this regular ongoing management level, but also sales level team meetings here. We have done all trainings through webinars for all their regional teams. Toyota is right now dispatching fuel cell specialists from Japan also to Southeast Asia as well as to China to run this fuel cell endeavor. First projects are being now worked on in Southeast Asia, and expectation really decision on formalizing this into a potential joint venture as indicated together with Toyota earlier this year. Well, I think that's happening then within their next fiscal year, which starts April 1 next year. But this does not hold us back from selling our EFOYs together. So it's really consistent operational work with the partner now. The only difference is we are not only doing it in Japan, we are doing it in the other regions too. And,
yeah,
and
good.
High attention on their end.
Okay, thanks.
Well, thanks, Mate.
And we haven't received further questions. I will hand back to the speakers.
Well, with this, we conclude for today. Thank you very much for taking the time, for your trust and interest in SFC. And as always, the offer here, if you have further questions, don't hesitate to reach out to Daniel, Susan, or myself. Thank you very much for your time and have a great day.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.